Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 342.
This week on the podcast, we're in a real-life pandemic, so stay home.
Plus, maybe you need help remembering that tomorrow is Tuesday and an election day because last week has felt like 12 years.
Plus, Sunday night's debate was the most torturous yet, mostly because we were all stuck at home watching it.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And you can find us in two separate homes today because, like many Americans, we are self-quarantining.
That's right.
Or at least Brent is now self-quarantining. He was not until today because his work made him go in.
Yeah, but I worked today.
Yeah, that's madness. I've been self-quarantining since Friday. I'm already losing my mind. I haven't seen a person in days. I did jumping jacks in my home today because the other weird thing about what's going on in LA right now is that on top of all of the quarantining fun, it's been raining.
Oh, so it's really adding to the dystopian nature of all of this.
It's the day that we all kind of discovered that we were like actually going to get stuck in our homes was also a day where it was like super gloomy and raining all day.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is how it ends. And then on that very same day, one of my friends had what she described as a coughing man punch in one of her windows, and she was just like, this is actually what the apocalypse looks like. This is it.
I'll tell you when I knew what the apocalypse looked like. It was watching Sarah Palin do Baby Got Back on The Masked Singer.
That was a bad omen for things to come.
Right.
A lot. This
a real
whole
harbinger
week has,
of...
has felt like, I mean, enough people have made the joke that it feels like 12 years, and also we have made that joke just now in the rundown. So you're familiar with the feeling, but that is honestly how, like, my mother was on the podcast last weekend.
Yeah,
like
we had dinner.
She was,
it was
visiting.
Great.
I feel like she's been gone for years. I feel like I've just been sitting in my
totally.
Home for like a decade.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure doing what. It's hard to know.
I know.
While you're home, though, one thing that you can do is you can fill out the census.
You guys, it doesn't take, you know what? In normal times,
it doesn't take long enough.
Right. In normal times, it would be great that it only takes like 3 minutes to fill out the census because you would be... hey guys, it's so easy. Like you can fill out the census, but like you actually almost want it to take longer.
Right. We're all hurting for things to do at home
right.
at our computers. It feels like the census could
anyway,
have been longer.
Right. If you're looking for like a 3 minute like bucket of time to kill, which you don't know. Like
first of all, you are looking for at least 3 minutes to fill. You're looking to fill months
yeah.
at this point.
Right.
Weeks, if not months.
Yeah.
So you certainly have time for the census.
But do that. Yeah.
It'll also bring you joy.
No excuse. And another reason why you should fill out the census is because if you don't, then somebody's going to knock on your door. And you know what you don't want? Somebody knocking
People.
On your fucking door.
That's so true. And Brent would know firsthand because someone knocked on his door just
I
before we started recording.
I literally, not 30 minutes ago, had somebody... and this just, I already hated the prop system, but now I really hate the fucking prop system.
I mean, this is a sign that it's bad for our
health. Somebody knocked on my damn door and said that he was collecting signatures for the ballot initiatives that are going to be on for November. And I literally looked at him like he had three heads. And I was like, please leave immediately. And then he said to me, well, you can use your own pen. As if I was concerned about his fucking pen.
Jesus Christ.
I was not.
No, you were concerned about the human being.
I was concerned about his pen. I was concerned about the entire interaction.
Right.
I mean, which the pen was certainly a part of. But like... go home.
First of all, they should be waiving the signature requirements for these.
Or
they did in New York State.
Right.
Like,
or pushing
there's no
them
reason.
To when they have to be accepted by or whatever or verified by.
Like, there should not be a reason that anyone is going door to door collecting anything except maybe like a grocery list from elderly people.
That's right. Yeah.
Because that's where we are. Because look, you guys, no matter when we record this and when we release it, things are probably going to have changed dramatically on the coronavirus front.
Oh, yeah.
Things are moving fast.
Yeah.
A few days ago, we thought that maybe we would just continue to live our lives and worry a little bit about coronavirus.
Thursday, I was debating whether I was going to go to a leadership conference in Sacramento by plane.
Yeah.
That was 3 days ago.
Went ice skating on Wednesday and thought, I'm ice skating. And even on Wednesday, we were like, okay, coronavirus, we should wash our hands while we're here. But we weren't like, we shouldn't ice skate.
Right.
And then by Thursday, it was like, should we ice skate? And then by Friday, it was like, you can't ice skate. And then today, it's like, you can't do anything because everything is closed.
Yeah.
Oof. And this has all happened over the weekend, too. And people were just sitting at home because they couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And so all weekend, we've just gotten increasingly dire warnings about places that we can and can't go anymore. And also, it's become clear that there's sort of like a Twitter class of people who are really on the ball on this information. And then like the general American public that aren't. Because, so look, most of Europe is on lockdowns now. COVID-19 is now officially a pandemic.
Yeah.
There are huge outbreaks. I mean, we know about Italy, but there's huge outbreaks in France and Spain. All of these countries are on essentially a full like police state style lockdown. Today, Trump finally got around to telling us not to gather in groups of larger than 10, which is better than his previous responses of doing nothing and or pretending everything was under control and we should do what we want.
Right.
Some GOP officials still haven't gotten the message. Trump's now been exposed to coronavirus multiple times in the last week. Right. He claims that he took a test and that it was negative, but you can't trust anything.
Yeah, we shouldn't believe that for one second.
Also, the press conference where he announced the 10-person rule had 16 people on stage with him. He was breaking the rule at the press conference itself.
Amazing.
I mean, come on. And then also celebrities are getting it. Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson have coronavirus. Idris Elba has corona.
People in the NBA. I mean, that was the same day. That was the real day. I believe that was Wednesday. That was like
Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah,
maybe.
That was Sarah Palin day. That was NBA canceling the rest of the season. That was a lot of sport, like March Madness that day. Also, that was the day. It was like all happened sort of like one day where you're like, oh, I get it.
And like all day, new things were happening that were just blowing everyone's mind.
Right.
And now we're all like experts in epidemiology, which wasn't
except the people who aren't. Except the people who were doing Sunday Funday yesterday in West Hollywood.
I mean, what's been so fascinating is I have literally been stuck in my home all weekend because I am supposed to be under essentially a self-quarantine. I'm not actually sick, but I'm just a human being who's trying not to spread coronavirus around to elderly people. So I'm not going out. The last time I went into a grocery store was on Friday. There were still some items left on the shelves.
Yeah.
By Friday afternoon, there was nothing. Then midday Saturday, Brent went shopping and accidentally found toilet paper.
And that was only out of boredom. I literally texted you because you and I had planned to like go to the grocery store at some point, and I was like sitting around, and it was like 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and I live like a half a block away from a grocery store. So I was like, I'm going to Gelson's like just to see what's what up there, and mysteriously found food. I didn't find the food that I wanted, but I was expecting they still had some things that I was surprised about. Everybody's really been hot on the trail for canned beans. I got some of those.
Been fascinating what is and is not available,
right? Everybody's been hot on the trail for dried pasta. I got some dried pasta.
I have more dried pasta.
So you would be horrified by it, but
I mean, gross. But I mean, at this point, you take any pasta you can find.
Well, I do Freshly a lot of weeks for like meals at work, and I had been canceling it because I've been trying to be better about like making my own meals, but like this week I was like, I'm fucking getting Freshly if they'll come to my house, but they messed up my order and gave me a bunch of meat related things, so I guess a carnivore in the quarantine.
Let me tell you, everyone is, because
I'm like bolognese, I mean, I guess if I have to, like I'm not trying to die.
But we live in a city where everyone claims to be a vegan, but let me tell you which products went first at every single grocery store.
Oh, meat.
The meat products.
Yeah, there's nothing in the meat aisle at all.
You can't buy meat. I have like 1,000 pounds of tofu at my house now because you can't find any meat anywhere.
Yeah.
The last time I went to a grocery store in a non-panic state was maybe Thursday, and I bought 2 chicken breasts thinking, well, I'll have 2 chicken breasts. I didn't know I would need 2 months worth of chicken breasts. I mean, I just didn't know. I'm hoping also, it's so weird because there is not a food shortage in the traditional sense of food shortage, in that there's plenty of food and those supply lines are working fine.
Right.
It's just the panic buying. So I'm hoping at some point everyone just like has too much toilet paper and they're like, we should stop buying so much toilet paper so that some of us who run out of toilet paper.
Well, I do. My boyfriend got mad at me when I told him that I bought toilet paper because he knows that I have toilet paper in my house. And I
tell him,
and I used you as
you
a,
were,
I threw you under the bus on that one.
Well, no, tell him it was a community mission because I was the one who was, as you were going to the grocery store, I was texting you being like, what, all I need is toilet paper. I just need to know that I have like some toilet paper.
The thing about the toilet paper thing is that like, people need toilet paper, so, like, buy toilet paper. But also, like, you don't need more toilet paper than you would normally need during a time when you would need toilet paper.
It's not like hand sanitizer where we're all using more of it now. Like, we're all using the same amount of toilet paper. There's no reason for that to be in shortage.
Right.
It's madness.
God.
Meanwhile, we've got a crazy red state, blue state situation going on, too, where, like, a lot of red states are really slow on the uptake when it comes to canceling things and taking sort of serious public health steps. The exception being Ohio, whose governor has been ahead of the curve on everything, including ahead of California and New York. He closed the schools before everyone else. Yeah. Mike DeWine has been, like, really hitting the trail hard. And he was, like, he got in there when they had very few cases of coronavirus and was just like, we're going to have a lot more soon, so we better take these steps now.
Yeah, well, maybe he's a man who, like, reads.
He must be. He must know a scientist or something. It's crazy. Meanwhile, that same weekend that Mike DeWine, who is a Republican governor, is, like, gallivanting around Ohio, you know, shutting things down, the governor of Oklahoma went out to dinner and bragged about it on social media.
Yeah, sure.
In a packed restaurant with his kids.
Well, and there's something important, I think, that we all need to be aware of. And I think everybody sort of knows it, at least certainly I feel like Democrats know it and people who are just thinking people know it. But, like, we are, and I've seen a lot of tweets about it, so this is not something that I just made up. But I want everybody who's listening to this to take note of this and file it away for when the Republicans all tell us that we overreacted.
That's right.
Because that is what's going to happen. Because what's going to happen is, although maybe not, because, like, I feel like we waited long enough that it still might very well be a shit show around here.
Right.
But if it doesn't end up, if it doesn't end up being the shit show that is, like, the worst case scenario where millions of people are dead, you're going to have somebody on your Facebook feed, on your television, your president, who was out there saying that it wasn't really that big of a deal. And what you need to know
is
that the reason that it wasn't that big of a deal is because we are self-quarantining right now. So, like, be at the ready to remind your idiot relatives who just wanted to go, you know, play Mahjong or whatever it was that they wanted to do, that the reason that this all ended up not being 2 million people dying is because we did this.
Also, speaking of relatives, everyone is having a tremendously difficult time getting their parents to stay in the house.
Right? And like they're the ones who, like, shouldn't be going outside.
The widespread millennial problem right now. And, like, listen, there were some millennials and Gen Xers that were hitting up bars last weekend that
definitely
should not
have been.
Totally, thinking
they were really cool. That not a great idea, but, like,
but, like, older millennials and Gen Xers are mostly heeding the advice to stay home and then also are having their parents try to wander out into crowds left, right, and center, grocery shopping up a storm, and then telling them about it.
Right.
Like, the number of, this week, friends of mine and I have had to, like, contrive fake text messages and fake phone calls to keep our parents in the house. We had to pretend to text one of their mothers as CNN answering a question for her about whether she should go to work. We've been pretending that the Queen's Library is closed when it is, in fact, open in an effort to keep another friend's mother out of the libraries.
No, no.
Like, I mean, it's been a mess.
Yeah.
And you know things are topsy-turvy because Ted Cruz retweeted AOC on a tweet that was her telling people to stop going to bars and go home.
Yeah.
So, because Ted Cruz is self-quarantining right now because of his, I think because of CPAC, right?
I believe so, yes.
Because the other thing we should remember is that this is very clearly going around in Republican circles because they are the people that are having to repeatedly shake Trump's hand.
Right.
And Donald Trump, if he's negative, is certainly carrying coronavirus germs around with him because he's been around so many coronavirus victims at this point that it's not even to be believed.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Northern California, they now have shelter in place orders in 6 counties where they're like Italy style, actually can't leave their houses unless it's to go do essential errands.
Yeah.
And, you know, you still can't buy toilet paper. And also doctors don't have enough supplies. So beyond toilet paper, we are also failing. Late stage capitalism is failing us in numerous supply line related endeavors.
In a way that we all really knew in our hearts.
Yeah.
It was failing us already.
And keep this in mind because we're about to have a discussion about the Sanders-Biden debate last night. And this is a point that I want to come back to.
Yeah, of course.
So Congress has passed a relief bill
that
seemed adequate 3 days ago, but now needs to be more than 100 times bigger.
Right. And also needs to be read word for word by Louis Gohmert.
Right. Who yeah, Louis Gohmert
is holding concerned. The whole thing up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to waste tax dollars, Brent, on just some dumb pandemic. Not when you could waste tax dollars on a war.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, those tax dollars need to be used for more important purposes.
Yeah.
There are so many countries we could still invade using those tax dollars. And if we're just going to give people relief from a huge economic downturn. Oh, because the other thing that we should mention is that the stock market had its worst day today. Well, I think in history, because it actually was worse than the 1929 Great Depression stock crash.
It was. I think wasn't there one day, it was worse than the worst in the 20s that like led to the depression. But I think there was a day in the 80s when it crashed just like randomly.
I think we surpassed that day already.
Oh, we did. Okay. All right. Well,
I think that day we passed on like Thursday Great. Or something, Friday. So it like doesn't, I mean, like the economy is like, unsurprisingly, because there's so much, first of all, the administration is not giving us any clear guidance on what to
right.
do.
Well, right. I mean, the worst there's, day up until today, I think, had been the day after Trump's address.
Right. No, exactly.
Because that didn't yeah. give the markets time, much confidence that things were going to be okay.
Every time that he gets in front of a microphone, the stock market crashes. That's something to keep in mind for everyone, yeah. including the people that know Donald Trump personally.
Yeah.
And so anyway, in the midst of all of this, and the reason we're coming to you on Monday and not Sunday is on Sunday when we probably could have come to you in the same room, but now on Monday we're unable to.
Right.
Is because in the midst of all of this, they held an audience-free two-person CNN debate between
right.
Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, who had to stand 6 feet apart because of social distancing
right. and then
regulations.
The camera was placed in a way where like they were on the far edges of the camera or of the frame, which is like
it looked crazy.
It looked crazy. Like I get that they were 6 feet apart and they wanted to probably be as close as they could to like be closer, but they had separate camera angles where they had like ISOs on each of them. So like, it didn't make any sense to me that that was where they decided to have the two shot, because like all you could see was just like blank space in between them. Had they just like pulled out a little bit and had them just like they were really sort of like barely on frame, which Biden knows a little bit about because he wandered off camera during one of his live streams earlier this week. So
that's right.
he knows all about that.
Right. Yeah, the candidates have had to switch to online organizing, which
right.
Has
Sanders
made
had like
for
a huge online event with like all sorts of bands and various people, and it was just like, well, okay. I mean, I don't know.
Well, he loves a rally.
I don't know how that's exciting, but maybe it is. I don't know. I didn't
we're
have
having
a chance
to learn
see
to
it.
Find the excitement in watching things on our computer in many ways.
Yeah, it's true.
We are.
Also, what was stupid about that CNN debate is they had those two 6 feet apart, and then there were three moderators who were sitting shoulder to shoulder.
Yes. What would happen to social distancing for the moderators? It's okay if they catch coronavirus.
Yes.
We can't spare the presidential candidates, but if a moderator dies here or there, who cares?
I know.
It was wild that they set up the most ridiculous looking shot on earth for the candidates and could not at least set up an equally ridiculous shot for the moderators so that they could be socially distancing.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, Biden went up to the moderators, breaking the social distance rules, and Sanders did not.
Right.
And then everyone, you know, made a big deal about how Sanders understands social distancing and Biden doesn't. But obviously, the story
well,
out
Biden
of the
is a man who has never understood social distancing.
Even in other times, just appropriate distance from other people.
Right.
He's something he's struggled with in the past.
Over the years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this must be torture.
Right.
Him.
I know. He can't give any back massages right now.
There's right. No strangers.
What will we do with
back
his hands?
Massages. It's I mean, I'm not eager to find out. I can only imagine what kinds of inappropriate hand gestures await us with a free-handing Biden.
Gross.
Anyway, the debate was literally just two elderly men shouting at each other.
Yeah, you know what was weird? Somehow I was expecting that like maybe the reason that previously I had felt they felt so old was due to the fact that there were actually younger people on the stage with them. So there was this sort of like clear, stark, you know, like dichotomy between young and old. So it's like Joe Biden looks older when he's standing next to Pete Buttigieg. But that is in fact not the case.
Nope.
At all. In fact, they somehow looked exponentially older standing next to each other. I don't know how all that works, but it did.
While it was two bickering old men. They the bickering got real bickery because Joe Biden kept like literally lying about his record.
Yeah. And the moderators had no interest in getting involved in that.
No, and it was crazy because he did it repeatedly.
Oh, yeah.
There were just like numerous times where...
And then not only, what was so funny is when they got into that argument about Social Security, when Sanders was like, did you or did you not say this? And he kept saying, no, I didn't say this. And then finally Sanders was like, didn't you say that everything was on the table from the floor of the Senate? And he was like, well, yeah, I said everything was on the table, but like I've never said that I was going to cut Social Security. And like, what?
I mean, it's wild also because whether or not the context paints the full picture of this, there is a video clip of him on the floor of the Senate saying, I did not just try to cut Social Security once. I tried to cut it twice. I tried to cut it a third time. Right. I tried to cut it a fourth time. Like, there's video of it,
yeah.
Which is why Bernie Sanders told us all to go to the YouTube to find it.
Oh, my God. So good. Yes.
They also both did not say the correct name of the virus at some point.
Multiple times.
Sanders called it Ebola.
Right, and then even...
Biden called it SARS.
He at least realized that he had called it Ebola and then blamed Biden for putting Ebola in his head.
I know. Whereas Biden called it SARS, and then I tweeted about it, and then I got nasty replies because the coronavirus is technically a SARS virus, and I was like,
that's not what he meant, be honest.
But that's not what he meant, and you know it. So, like, get over yourselves. Exactly. But the most confusing part of the night was that Biden came out forcefully against Medicare for All.
Right.
In a way, and I've been having some thoughts about this recently because on Friday I was talking to someone about it who finally was like, I don't understand why moderates don't have the position of a public plan with a private option, which was the wording I've been searching for years.
Interesting.
Because the moderate position on this issue should not be that we're left in this weird semi-private system where we fend for ourselves.
No.
And at one point, Biden even said that the fact that Italy didn't like halt a pandemic single-handedly means that a single-payer system doesn't work. And I was like, wait until it comes here. It hasn't happened here yet, Joe Biden,
also
but it's going to be worse.
Right, you're absolutely right, because it will, I mean, it's probably going to be worse here. But the idea isn't that it would have stopped it from getting there. The idea is that you deal with it better once it is there. I mean, like, having a single-payer system doesn't keep a virus... outside your borders. So, like, his reasoning there, besides being just, like, wrong, because I think, as you said, we're going to see how it is in the first country that doesn't have that system. It was also just, like, it was so flawed, like, on a base level of, like, sense-making.
When I've been hearing people making that argument, and I want to point out that no country that doesn't have a single-payer system has yet had this hit epidemic levels.
Well, right.
Because there are almost none of them. So we're the ones that are going to be the test for that.
Yeah.
Like, we're the first nation to have this dumb patchwork system that's going to be a test for that. So this talking point does not mean anything. And the other thing that Biden kept saying, because they kept asking, you know, what would you do for this, you know, crisis? And Biden and Sanders tried to make this point, but Biden kept saying that he would make sure that care for treatment of coronavirus was covered. He was always very clear to say of coronavirus only. Not acknowledging that, and I know this full well, that there are many secondary health consequences of a huge health emergency
totally.
Like this. So there's not just the first wave.
And Sanders tried to get around to sort of explaining that.
Right. He tried to say it. I don't know that he said it as clearly as I wish he had.
I think there were a lot of sort of missed opportunities on his part, which is sort of unfortunate. It's sort of, you know, I voted for Sanders and I will vote for, you know, as I've said on this podcast before, we'll vote for the ghost of Bernie Sanders, you know, if necessary at a certain point. But like also that debate really made me pine, you know, and at me if you want, but like made me pine for the days of Liz Warren in a presidential debate.
I think everyone,
because I think she literally would have used him up, spit him out, and we would have be marching to the convention with Liz Warren as our candidate right now.
It made me pine for Liz Warren circa October of 2019.
Well, right, exactly.
It did not make me pine
or
for
most recently,
Liz Warren.
The most recent
right,
version.
Or very, very recent.
Right.
It didn't make me pine for like November Liz Warren.
No.
Uh-uh. But it made me pine for the Liz Warren who reminded us that these were Republican talking points. And just if you I was going to say, if you are a listener who doesn't understand what we're talking about yourself, a health crisis has more than just the consequences of the disease itself. People have underlying health conditions that end up affecting them for the rest of their lives. We're hearing about people losing lung function.
Right.
There's PTSD from dealing with a crisis that affects people differently.
Right.
And also that PTSD can be related to the stress of having a family member fall ill or get sick, of being forced to quarantine in an abusive home. I mean, there's like a number of ways in which this is going to have secondary health consequences that are not going to be covered by the kind of coverage that Biden is talking about.
Right.
And as we learned in 9/11, the kinds of diseases that are the kinds of health consequences that emerge after a crisis often shock you 10 years later. I mean, they don't just happen in the moment and everything's fine.
Totally.
And that's as true in an epidemic as it is in an act of mass violence.
Right.
And it's not addressed by a plan like Biden's.
Right. Well, and what I would also say to Joe Biden specifically, because like he, you know, because, you know, as we know, healthcare is personal to Joe Biden.
That's right.
But, you know, Joe Biden also has this sort of like cancer moonshot of his. And, you know, in his own healthcare plan, he talks about sort of like all of this money to cure Alzheimer's. You know, I would say if I were Sanders, I would have been like, don't you think that cancer is a national emergency?
Right.
You know, don't you, you know, so like, I just feel like that's sort of like what it's like any specific health issue for any single person is an emergency to that person.
That's right.
So like,
and certainly a bankruptcy over health costs is an emergency to everyone, no matter what those health costs were caused by.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think Sanders ultimately did a good job. I don't know that he did as good of a job in the whole coronavirus area, where I felt like there was a lot of room for him to sort of play there. And he tried, and I don't think that he did a terrible job. But I think he did a better job probably in the second half of the debate, which was probably, at least for most people at home, the less consequential half of the debate.
Yeah. Well, if you're at home, the only consequential part of the debate, if any coverage of it is to be believed, is when Joe Biden committed to having a female VP.
Totally. And you know what? That was smart on his part, because I think on some level he knew probably that that was what was going to be the takeaway from that debate.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, like, you know, there's... Look, if he's going to get good at political theater all of a sudden, then that makes me feel at least marginally better about him as the candidate. I mean, it doesn't make me feel great about it, but I mean, like, he's going to need more. He's going to need more tricks like that.
Yeah, that's like such a tricky one too, because obviously, like, Sarah Palin is a woman. So,
well, right.
You know, he's a man who's talked about running with Republicans. Like, him promising to run with a woman is not as meaningful. It doesn't mean he's promising to run with a feminist.
I know. Yeah. Lila and I were texting last night, like, ooh, I wonder who it's going to be. And obviously people think it could be Stacey Abrams, and Amy Klobuchar has sort of accidentally potentially hinted that it's her. But like, I at one point texted you and I was like, well, we also have to remember Republicans.
Right.
So.
Could be anyone.
Could be anybody.
But really? Yeah, so tomorrow is an election day.
Maybe.
You may have forgotten because you were consumed by coronavirus news and you're stuck in your home with your kids and you're tired.
I know.
But it's an election day in at least some of the states it was supposed to be an election day in.
And maybe or maybe not in another state.
Right. Yeah. Ohio today announced they were trying to delay their primary until June, and a judge struck it down, saying it was past the deadline where they could do that. But we still we're recording this at almost 9 p.m. Pacific time. We still don't know if Ohio is going to vote tomorrow.
Right.
It's like midnight in Ohio right now.
Yeah. It was like just before this podcast started that the judge smacked it down, I think. Actually.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Breaking
so
news.
We don't know what's going to happen in Ohio. Louisiana and Kentucky did successfully postpone their elections.
Sure.
But Arizona, Florida, and Illinois are going ahead.
Yeah.
Now, how people are supposed to socially distance at the polls and how poll workers are supposed to not get coronavirus is a mystery no one has solved.
Right.
Maybe it'll be great for Bernie Sanders because maybe only young people will show up. Maybe it will be terrible because it seems like boomers are the only people who are completely unwilling to heed any reasonable advice about going out. Because of this, we can't give you any polls because the polls are trashed because, I mean, we don't even know. We don't know who could possibly show up.
Right. And also, don't look at them.
Well, right. Also, don't look at any polls for the rest of the election.
Right.
But I did want to address before we're done, because this was a talking point that came up a lot during the debate on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which was just like, why hasn't Sanders just dropped out and endorsed Joe Biden? And I wanted to talk about that briefly before we finish talking about the elections, because I wanted to address why it's so critically important that he stay in the race. And I mean that if you are a Biden supporter yourself, that it is critically important to you that he stay in the race.
Totally.
You know, a lot of people are talking about how this is terrible for party unity. But what's actually worse for party unity is for 40% of the party to feel like their grievances weren't heard, their debate was not listened to, that they're very reasonable concerns about the candidate on his platform were not addressed. It is much more important that we give the two of those guys, even though they're elderly, grumpy old men who are just yammering at each other, a chance to hash out our differences so that at the end of the day, the left feels like they were a part of the process. This is an important part of building unity. You know, I think one thing that we didn't do very successfully with Clinton is really welcome the Sanders people on board. And part of welcoming them on board is listening to them.
Right.
And if you cut off their, you know, if you ask their candidate to drop out before half of the delegates have been cast in this election, you're telling half of the Democratic voters in this country that their voice cannot be heard on this issue.
Yeah.
They're until and even after there is no chance that Bernie Sanders could somehow win the election, there is no reason to ask him to step out. But I would also argue that even after that point, it's important that the party know that there is this group of voters who wanted to be heard and to sort of figure out how many of those voters there are and how to reach out to them. And you have to let the process play out democratically to do that. You cannot decide that just because a bunch of states early on voted one way that we've called the thing and that everyone should drop out of the race. I resented when those other candidates dropped out before Super Tuesday. I think that was incredibly rude to their voters. I think obviously we should all vote on one day so that we don't have to run into this problem.
Right.
But to get the left on board, you absolutely need to let them be a part of the process till the end. You can't decide that they aren't important anymore and that they just have to jump on board. That is how you end up with a Hillary Clinton-style candidate.
I agree. And we already are seeing, first off, it would be easy to get Joe Biden to fill his platform with things that either Bernie Sanders or Liz Warren cooked up because his platform is empty.
Right.
So he needs plans to make a platform with.
When he also
who had a plan for everything. I mean, she was sort of pre-Liz Warren about sort of like, I mean, she had a white paper for every single topic that had ever been thought of by humankind. So she didn't need Bernie Sanders' plans because she already had her own. Joe Biden needs all of Bernie Sanders' plans.
It's an empty vessel.
I mean, he might dumb him down a little bit. But I mean, you know, like we saw this already. I mean, he signed on to the Liz Warren bankruptcy bill, which is a thing that those two had clashed about in the past. And he also, you know, it's ultimately the Hillary Clinton free college for anybody who makes less than either $100,000 or $125,000. I can't remember. But the only reason she did that anyway was because of Bernie Sanders. So like we're already starting to see this. Already. And I thought actually one of the worst missteps that Biden had last night was when they asked him specifically about this. And granted, they asked him about it after Sanders had literally just sort of like come to steal his lunch over Social Security and various things. But they asked him how he was going to be able to win over Sanders supporters. And what he said was, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to after that, which is like, he's also not doing a great job of party unity either. People are talking about like Bernie Sanders is the one who somehow needs to make party unity a thing. But it's like you get party unity by both sides of the party becoming united. It's not just us coming to him just because he's only ahead by 100 fucking delegates out of like the 1,600 that there have been that have voted.
Yeah. No, exactly. I think also you have to remember that part of his mission right now is to find out where his voters are. And if we stop talking to him, he can't find us. So
right.
The reason he took those plans from Warren and Sanders is because he found out that's where the voters were.
Yeah.
We need to keep telling him where we are on the issues, even if he doesn't – If he does not right now stand for Medicare for All, that's fine. But he is looking at every single state that he is winning, going to the polls, and then saying in exit polls that they support Medicare for All. We need to make sure that Sanders supporters and other Democrats who we need in November keep showing up for those races so that those exit polls can send him a message.
Right.
You know, he needs to know where the voters are. He's still in the process of finding them.
Right. And I think what he could do, and this is the thing that has bothered me about Democrats ever since Clinton, and this is why I still sort of like blame her for this, because forever Democrats had claimed that regardless of what they ever felt like could get passed, that like the end goal was to have everyone insured.
Right.
And I feel like at some point we, and I think it was in 2016, we got told by her that actually, no, that's not the case.
Because it's not possible.
Because it's not possible. So like, I think what Joe Biden could do, and this is what I think all Democrats should be doing, because I think it's ultimately what they all think, but they just seem to be afraid to say so. Like, I don't actually think Joe Biden wants 18 million people to remain uninsured. Like, I don't think right. that that's his plan. Like, I don't actually think that that's what he thinks. What I wish that he would just say, and I think that this would appease at least a certain number of Sanders supporters. It wouldn't appease all of them, obviously, but like, I agree with you that at some point the goal is to have every human in this country insured. And like, don't hear moderates saying that. And that is what I think is really unfortunate, that the conversation has shifted that far where we can't even agree that like that's the goal, regardless of what our plan is, what our immediate plan is.
Well, and I think also every time that they use the term universal care, but they are talking like Republicans by meaning universal access to care, the same way we all have access to yachts and private planes. And what they should lead with is, my goal is we all have coverage. Now, how we get there, we can talk about it.
Right.
But that should be what certainly the moderates, whose plans don't allow for that,
right,
should be leading with, so that we can say to them when their plan doesn't result in that, which it won't because it's actually impossible for it to result in that, we can say to them, okay, well, your goal was actually universal coverage in a meaningful sense that every single person has coverage. This plan didn't work. Let's move on to another way of approaching it. Instead of them being like, this plan's working. It's going to work. It's working. Because kind of what he did was say like, no, it's going to be fine. We're going to go back to the ACA and everything's fine.
Right. But just say like, this is a first step in a move, you know, the second step, if you want to acknowledge Obamacare. Like, this is the next step in a move to make sure that everyone is insured.
But it's not a more or less realistic plan than any other plan, because the mandate was struck down in court.
Right. So it's going to be fought with the same vehemence by the healthcare industry any plan would be.
But also the mechanism by which their plan was supposed to work got shot down by the courts.
Yeah.
So they actually can't approach it anymore that way.
Yeah.
They have to think of a new way to do it.
Yeah.
So they're just not being honest with themselves. But I don't understand why moderates aren't saying our goal is, you know, Medicare for All with a private option, which is essentially like Medicare Part D. So we give everyone a basic plan.
Right.
Everyone has it. It's free. Now, if you are a rich person who believes you deserve special care, or you are a union who wants to look like you're providing value to your members, then you go and buy a Part D plan that gives you, or you know, whatever we call it in this context, that gives you special person privileges and extra fancy care.
Right.
But as we've learned this week, having a plan that basically covers everyone so that people are not afraid to go to the doctor is actually pretty important to your own personal health, even if you are not the one sick.
Right.
It turns out that a system that allows us to easily identify and manage a crisis, especially before we get to the point where we're all quarantined in our homes for 2 months, is a preferable system.
Right.
And anyway, so they've passed a relief bill. The relief bill provides paid sick leave to 20% of the workforce. That's better than the 0% that were required to have paid sick leave before, but it exempts employees at most major corporations. Donald Trump held a press conference announcing his coronavirus plans this weekend, where he just invited the CEOs of every major Fortune 500 company to give a speech about how great they're doing at solving the problem, even though all of their stores are the ones we can't find toilet paper in.
Right.
And then also lied about the fact that Google was creating some sort of website that no one has heard of, and Google hasn't heard
news
of.
To them.
You know, tracking coronavirus. Seattle has just, Washington State has just gone it alone at this point. They're like working on their own coronavirus test. They're working on their own coronavirus vaccine. They've just decided to give up on the federal government, probably because the federal government told states they were on their own for getting things like respirators and other needed medical equipment. And so, listen, you guys, just as one final point, our safety net is so crappy that it actually cannot be repurposed to handle this crisis.
Totally.
So we need new safety net features. We cannot just take and expand what we already have. What we have is so middling and insufficient for this moment that we need to be able to think bigger. You have Mitt Romney accidentally or potentially purposely saying he's in favor of UBI this week. I mean, you have a lot going on because we're trying to think of big measures. Encourage your members of Congress and yourselves to think big about how we could protect people, because this is actually a big enough crisis that we should not just be like, oh, we'll expand unemployment a little and it'll be fine.
Right. And we have to get back. And I don't know how this happens quickly, because I don't think. But I mean, it's also just really highlighting the fact that like our Congress is broken too, because they're just not able to. I mean, as it is right now, we've got somebody holding up the, you know, bills that are trying to get passed for this. But it's like, we've seen other countries like move swiftly. I mean, some of these other countries have like halted mortgage payments. I've seen stories about how some of these other countries have also like passed bills to immediately get checks to, people who are independent contractors and also artists. I think Germany like passed a bill to like, because I've seen a lot of people, you know, I've got a really good friend on Facebook who is somebody who makes most of his living as a freelance theater reviewer. He can't do that. Right. And he's like panicked about like what he's going to do, how he's going to pay his rent. Like what,
you know,
like our government should be able to deal with those things. Like, and I realize they can't deal with some of those things like overnight, but like we are just not living in an America where that is something that like two sides are ever going to be able to like get a, you know, together on. And it's just sort of like, it's depressing is what it is. I mean,
we're currently not living in an America where two sides are agreeing to self-quarantine.
Well, right. I know. We're far away.
Daytona Beach today was packed.
Yeah.
Like, so we're living sort of one step removed from good ideas already. In any case, we are going to be coming to you via the two-room solution until our quarantine ends.
Yeah.
Until maybe in 2 weeks when we both either have or don't have coronavirus, we can go back to recording in one room as long as we don't talk to anyone else.
Right. You know what I highly recommend, and I know that you are now doing this also, is that the one thing that has given me peace of mind, because look, it's also, it's easy to go crazy when you're self-quarantining. And it's also easy to convince yourself that like maybe you're getting sick. Like literally to the point where it's like, oh, I have a dry cough. Yeah. And then you remember that it's actually just because you need to have a glass of water. Like, you know,
it's happened to me multiple times.
I know. But like, and I'm probably doing it to a point where it could be considered obsessive compulsive right now. But like sometimes the thing that makes me feel better is taking my temperature.
I've taken my temperature at least 3 times today, if not more.
Oh, only what's wrong with you?
I just, every just time that three? I'm in my bedroom, every time that I walk through my bedroom, I'm like, well, I'll take my temperature now. Like,
and look, I'm not saying if you don't have a temperature to like go outside and have a party, but like what I'm saying is that like if you need something to like pull you off of a ledge where
you have coughed once and thought to yourself,
well, I need
you're
to
on
go
death's
to the hospital
now. Right.
Yeah.
At least take your temperature first. I have one piece of advice, which is all the temperatures are sold out on Amazon. The way that I got a thermometer, I mean, all the thermometers. Right. The way that I got a thermometer is that I purchased a newborn baby care kit that included a thermometer, which was cheaper than getting like a really expensive thermometer on Home Depot or something, which was the only thing left. And so I now also have a fun array of baby items in my home.
Amazing.
So that's what's going on here.
Yeah.
But if you need to take your temperature 100 times a day, just live your truth, as they would say here.
That's what they would say. Yeah.
Okay, well, we will be back next week with news from the quarantine.
That's right.
Talk to you then. Bye.